Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Takeout ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Five, four, three,
two, one.
But who's counting, right?
His name is Major.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen,
please welcome Major Garrett
from the nation's capital.
Major, fantastic.
It's The Takeout.
This is a major achievement.
With CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent.
Major Garrett.
Yes, CBS. Yes, hi.
Major Garrett.
Major, that's nonsense, and you should know better.
Is Major out of the doghouse?
The answer is yes.
Welcome to the very best part of my broadcast week. You know, I say that all the time. I've been saying it since our show launched nearly 8 years ago. Why do I say that? Because it's just great to be with you. However you find the show, so many different platforms, you know what it is. It's an extensive deep dive conversation about politics, policy, a little bit of pop culture. Well, we're going to get politics, policy, history, and the law this week. I want to introduce Michael Kirk as our special guest. He is the director of and the force creative behind a new Frontline documentary called Democracy on Trial. It will premiere on PBS nationwide January 30th. Michael, it's great to see you.
Thank you, Major. You too.
And for those who are thinking to themselves, Michael Kirk, Frontline, he's got to be some sort of East Coast establishmentarian. Well, slow your roll. Born in Denver, raised in Boise, Idaho. He's part of the University of Idaho Alumni Hall of Fame. So slow your roll on that whole Eastern establishment stuff. Also, Michael is a substantial force in the field of documentary filmmaking. Peabody's, Emmys, Polk Awards, DuPont's, and all the rest. Democracy on Trial. Michael, I think I know what it's about. I do know what it's about. I've watched it. Remind my audience, Democracy on Trial, what is the essence of this documentary?
What actually happened on January 6th and in the months right before, from the night of the election, when Donald Trump said, frankly, we did win, from that moment until January 6th, what happened? It's been long enough that, according to surveys and polls that we've read, and I know you've read, Major, a very large number of people who answer the polls anyway and talk about it, a very large number of people think January 6th might have been overblown. Certainly the MAGA people believe that it might even have been a conspiracy by the FBI. Some Democrats even believe that. It's certainly true that what we thought was necessary as the sort of first thing that happens at the beginning of this most crucial presidential election year and election year across the board was an examination of this issue. What happened? How much of it was Trump's responsibility? Mm-hmm. And I mean, really, what happened from the people who were there, the people who worked for him, and the people who liked him? I don't think there's anybody talking in this film except one woman from Georgia who's not a Republican and a conservative Republican.
Right.
And so there's a handful of reporters and writers, but the vast majority of people talking about the substance of the story are conservative Republicans who supported Donald Trump. And so we wanted, that was the other criteria, was let's get Trump people in here. Let's hear what's going on. Let's get some lawyers in. Mm-hmm. Let's come to an understanding of not only what happened, but what is his legal liability to the extent that we can assess it from outside the process.
And a word to my audience, I told you after January 6th, this program would never forget, sanitize, or try to forget about or bury January 6th. This show would always remember January 6th because how we remember it in this country and what we conclude from it will have a very great deal to do with the future of this country. I am convinced of that. And Michael just made a couple of references to things that I think are important and worth digesting. Very early in the documentary, Michael, it is made clear that for the select committee on January 6th on the House side, there was an imperative. An imperative was to tell a story and tell it in a television or cinematic way. Michael, I don't need to tell you, but as I've traveled the country, that's one of the central complaints MAGA Republicans have about the whole process. They describe it as just episodic television. It right. was just a TV show. And they dismiss it as a TV show. And right off the bat, this Frontline documentary admits it was in part a TV show. Address that disconnect, if you will.
Say, it's a problem, I think. I'm old enough to have watched the Watergate hearings. Mm-hmm.
You and me both.
Yeah. And the way that the nation kind of sat down and just watched something and watched it happen. And it was, what did the presidents know and when did he know it? Remember that question?
Yep. From Howard Baker.
Well, that sort of is what I think was, that was a big event. It was a big TV show too. It was on all the time through the summer. And the same kind of moment happened around the Clarence Thomas Anita Hill hearings. But I think by the time we got to now, a couple years ago, congressional hearings, whether they were, about Benghazi or whatever they were, they became just these kind of food fight, food fest. Yes, there were bipartisan, but whatever bipartisan means, it means equally screaming on both sides of the the aisle. So I think they found themselves, this is what the story of the committee tells us, they found themselves saying, well, we've got all this stuff, years of stuff, millions of documents, thousands of depositions, whatever it all was. They sat there and they said, well, what difference is any of this going to make if people don't see it? So they made that fateful decision. It's a decision that I think the president, the former president, also has made, which is let's fight it out in public. Let's fight it out on television and on the internet. And let's do things that can capture people whose attention spans are not set up for long hearings with 7-minute speeches by the Republican, then 7-minute speeches by the Democrat. Let's get on with it. Let's get down to it. And let's make it interesting. They may have had their own reasons, which is it is also darn good television. Mm-hmm. And they decided to create that. There's one person in the film talks about the fact that Benny Thompson, the chairman, wanted things to pop. Yeah. On the TV show. Pop. Well, what does that mean, right? Well, pop in the sense of this turns out to be Bill Barr, the attorney general, the much hated and maligned attorney general, maligned and hated by the left. That man, first right out of the chute, they pull him up and he talks about telling the president of the United States what his allegations were bull. And man, that's one way to start. Bill Barr, right at the beginning, away you go. So it was a television show. It was television entertainment. And thank God for them in some ways, because we could use it for our purposes to tell this story as well. Use pieces of it anyway to tell the story.
And from your vantage point, long experience in this world, there's nothing wrong with that notion that you have to take the evidence you have and make it memorable and make it meaningful in this medium.
Yeah, I make television programs myself. I try to make them serious and fair and honest and accurate, chasing the truth all the time, like so many of our brothers and sisters are in the business. It's hard for me not to defend the idea that it was a TV show if they were doing things that really were TV stuff, like entertainment television. That's a whole different story. But but I think they tried to hew pretty closely to the facts as they saw them. And we thought our job is to keep them honest, too.
Exactly. And there's something else We've got about a minute and 20 before we need to go to break that I want to address. It's also early in the documentary, Democracy on Trial. People forget this. There was a bipartisan attempt to pass the House, died in the Senate, to create a bipartisan commission, equal subpoena power, equal budget, that would have provided a report before the election year. People gloss over that, like, oh, well, this select committee was just a partisan power grab to make Republicans look bad and the former president look bad. Look, there was an alternative that was blocked by Senate Republicans.
Yeah. Leader McConnell, we made a film about him, coincidentally, this year. And one of the things that became obvious about Leader McConnell is his... He feels he can't lead from the rear. He's got to lead his troops, and he's got to take them where they kind of want to go. And he said it became obvious that they didn't want to go where obviously Nancy Pelosi wanted to go and others wanted to go. They didn't even want to try to fight for the balance. They just wanted it to go away. And
if it wouldn't go away, denounce it as partisan. If it resurrected itself, as it inevitably did with the House committee on January 6th. The frontline documentary, Democracy on Trial, airs across PBS on January 30th. Michael Kirk is our special guest. Back for segment two in just one moment.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to The Takeout. Michael Kirk is our special guest. He is the director and creative force behind Democracy on Trial, frontline documentary airing across all PBS channels on January 30th. Michael, you mentioned this in segment one, but I want to drill down a bit on it because I think it's really, really important. Many of the people who testified to the January 6th committee and appear separately in different interviews with you and your producers are not just Republicans. Many of them are Trump Republicans, but for one thing. And the one thing was denying reality, breaking the law, breaking their oath, trampling the Constitution.
I think it's pretty clear that the people who we interviewed and who are sort of the central memorable figures, Rusty Bowers from Arizona, Shea Moss and her mother, Ruby, Secretary Raffensperger from Georgia. These people all are public officials and all supported Donald Trump in his run for the presidency, and even in some cases worked for Donald Trump, except for Shea and Ruby Moss. They were poll workers. They were all supportive of former President Trump, but they also all swore an oath. And it was in some ways fascinating to me that that's what they would fall back on. It's my oath versus what the president, my president wants me to do. And their calculation was that what he wanted them to do was, would make them abrogate their oath, not follow it. And they stood up to it. And they have paid the price, by the way, parenthetically, dramatically. But there they were. And that's really the subtext. The American public officials, Republican officials, conservative Republican officials, who when push came to shove, stood there and said, no, I can't do this. I have to honor my oath. And when it comes to an evaluation, which is part of the title of the film, of democracy and the state of democracy, in some ways, Major, it's kind of comforting to know that there are officials mm-hmm. who one might not think would do this, but who stayed the course with the Constitution of the United States. And it's a very hopeful sign, I think, in terms of the health of our democracy.
Another person on that roster would be former Vice President Mike Pence. Did you ask to sit down with him?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And they declined.
Well, it's funny why people decline, and it's funny how they decline. But I'm not going to say anything more than that, other than that you learn what they think and believe, but they just don't want to say it out loud, especially at the time, which was about a month and a half ago when we were shooting a lot of the interviews, and he was still what he considered a viable presidential candidate.
Mm-hmm.
You know what they say. It's reflected in thing. His attorney answered the subpoena and speaks. And in almost every case of the people who said they didn't want to talk, they did talk in one form or another.
You talked about your optimism a moment ago, and I think it's well-founded and well-regarded. But there's a part of me, Michael, that's also not optimistic, that's decidedly pessimistic, because Trump has embraced the big lie not only once, but repetitively. A sizable portion of the Republican Party that is Trumpist believes it. Even with the televised hearings, even with Jenna Ellis pleading guilty in Georgia,
right,
with Sidney Powell pleading guilty in Georgia, Kenneth Chesbrough pleading guilty, Peter Navarro has been sentenced to 4 months in prison for defying a January 6th Select Committee subpoena. Wisconsin officials have signed a statement saying they were wrong to propagate themselves as phony electors, and the election was legitimately won by Joe Biden. Michigan did an entire Republican legislative inquiry into this, found no evidence of numerically significant fraud. Everywhere this is tested, it fails, and it fails spectacularly. And yet, Michael, it persists. That's the part of this story that leaves me pessimistic.
And appropriately so, Major. 70 million people voted for Donald Trump in that election, or some number like that.
74.
Tens of millions of Americans voted for it. And tens of millions of Americans believe what he says and don't really seem to want to examine the facts of it or what actually happened. I would love it if everybody in America could sit down and watch the film and say, well, okay, I get it. All right, I get it. I get it. I get it on both sides. I understand the arguments that he's making about, you know, First Amendment and all of the rest of it. And if after watching the film, you know, people had a different opinion, well, that's fair enough. But I think part of the problem is people have not gone back and reexamined as we have, and don't seem open to that. I wish they did. I think we're really talking about 7 to 11% of the electorate who are the sort of independent, non-MAGA, non-already committed voters, however many tens of millions of those people there might be. In some ways, this is a film designed for the people who are on the fence or want to be reminded or maybe need some confirmation. But I wish the other side, whatever that other side is, the MAGA Trump followers, could watch it too with a kind of open mind. Wouldn't that be great? But it isn't. Doesn't seem likely.
And Michael, you mentioned, and I know from all of your previous work, you do strive for not only accuracy but a sense of balance and fairness. But there is no other side of this story. In essence, there is no other side. Meaning, well, what's the side that proved that it was stolen? There is no other side. And don't believe me. I did write a book about it, so I know something about this. But go to the court records. Go to the places where evidence has never been presented. Trump will point to some report or something, but it never gets tested in court, never gets tested on an evidentiary basis. That's a challenge for you in this realm, correct?
Well, and we wouldn't have been able to do it if we didn't have lots of extremely capable and knowledgeable people. These are not just people we've found at a bus stop and did a quick interview with them. These are prestigious attorneys on both sides. These are people who really think about the law and the power of the law and the importance of what it means to have such a thing hanging over a presidential candidate and over a presidential race. Here it is. This is maybe the most important pieces of information you need in order to make an informed judgment about the next president of the United States. There may be nothing more important, and it is available. That's the important thing to me. It is available. You can see it in this film. You can make the argument for yourself. You can maybe challenge your own easy beliefs. We tried to put enough of the other side in terms of constitutional law, not Trump's actions, but how hard it is to make this case in a courtroom in Washington, D.C., starting potentially March 4th. It is hard. It's one thing to have a committee do it, but the rules of evidence, the rules of everything that face Jack Smith and face Trump's attorneys are profound and challenging. And this primer that we've made that helps you watch that trial and listen to that trial should also indicate to you how hard it is to come to an easy decision that it's just going to be a pushover. You're going to get in the trial and he's going to get sent to prison. I'm not sure about that. And we wanted to introduce that level of doubt in terms of the law, in terms of his actions on any individual thing. The most important thing to remember, it isn't one thing he does. It isn't one thing he says. This has stunned me when we were making the film. It isn't that he asked Mike Pence to throw over the election. It is that it isn't illegal for him to do that, but it is that combined to all the other things, all the stuff with Rudy Giuliani, all the stuff of pressure on the Department of Justice, all the stuff on the pressure to Rusty Bowers in Arizona and Raffensperger in Georgia. It is the combination of all of that that may equal a conspiracy to commit a crime, a federal crime. And that's a big deal. And I think we try to explain that as clearly as we can in the movie so people will understand what to watch for and what to think about when they decide whether Donald Trump should be found guilty for this matter.
You do that very well. The documentary Democracy on Trial airs across PBS stations January 30th. Michael Kirk is the director, creative force behind it. Segment 3 of The Takeout in just 1 second. Welcome back to The Takeout. Michael Kirk is our special guest, the director and creative force behind Democracy on Trial, frontline documentary airing January 30th across PBS stations. Picking up on what we were just talking about, Michael, because I think it's really important. I was just in Iowa and New Hampshire for the Iowa caucuses, New Hampshire primary. Mm-hmm. Talked to Republicans in both states, elected officials and regular voters. And when I brought up January 6th, they started all by saying the same thing. It was very interesting to me. Well, you know, I'm really in favor of the First Amendment. And I sat back and I said, okay, I'm a reporter. I'm protected by the First Amendment. My entire career is built around the First Amendment. I'm in favor of the First Amendment too. And I'm like, do you regard January 6th as a First Amendment event? And they said, basically, yes. And I said, what about the violence? Well, I'm not in favor of the violence. Those people should be prosecuted. But, you know, speaking out against an election, there's nothing wrong with that. And I said, okay, well, what if that's foundationally false? Well, you still have a right to do that. Picking up on where we left off in segment 2, that is going to be one of the hurdles Jack Smith's going to have to cross. What is this line between advocacy, free speech, which, of course, is in the presidency? Hello, it's the bully pulpit for a reason. That's going to be an issue.
Intent. It's all about his intent.
Yes.
What was his intent? Why was he doing it? Was he just, you know, we show in the film a history that Donald Trump has of never losing, always claiming the other side cheated, the election was rigged, whether it was the Emmy Awards for The Apprentice or the lack of Emmy Award for The Apprentice, to whether Ted Cruz won in Iowa in 15.
Right, whether Mitt Romney lost in 2012.
Exactly. He has all of his life. You could probably go back to when he was in military academy and he didn't get to be drum major or whatever it was, and he claimed it. This is a pattern of Donald Trump. It's what he does. It's the way he acts. Now, if you're a Republican, if you're a MAGA Republican, you say, well, this is my guy. This is just the way he is. Full of bombast, full of BS. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, but it doesn't really matter.
Right.
Well, only time, apparently, it really mattered was when, according to the committee and according to the prosecutors, the only time it really does matter when free speech is being misused, fire in a theater, crying fire in a theater, a misuse of your freedom of speech, it causes all kinds of trouble, especially when there isn't one. In this case, when you can complain about the rigged election because it's a life pattern. But when it yields thousands of people attacking the Capitol building and Capitol police, and people are dying and people are being beaten up, and there's a lot of violence going on, and all of it, is the question for the court will be, is the free speech, did it cause them to go up to the building and commit crimes?
Was it, in essence, an attack by the executive branch on the legislative branch? I've said on this program, I said days after January 6th, that that's precisely what it was, that it was the executive branch attacking the legislative branch over the peaceful transfer of power. And that strikes me as the essence of Jack Smith's prosecution.
That's it. And that's what he has to prove. And he has to prove it not by any individual thing, although he's going to stack them all up just like we do, each little bit. And we try to be very careful and say to the audience, this little bit all by itself may actually be protected speech by the president. You know, he can say things. He's in a political environment, on an ad, on Meet the Press, on on whatever it is. He can say things that are untrue. He does. He has. I mean, a well documented. What did the Washington Post fact check do? 33,000 lies during his presidency. So the guy lies. All right. But and maybe it doesn't matter. I mean, I think it does, but maybe it doesn't matter that the truth becomes so malleable in his hands. But what really matters is if you stack them all up and it looks like a pattern of behavior that yields, and that's called a conspiracy, that yields criminal action. And that's what the jury in Washington, D.C. will be deciding.
Michael, it is a kind of a shorthanded assumption here in D.C., and those are always fraught with peril, the shorthanded assumptions that become conventional wisdom, but that it was the January 6th Select Committee that laid the foundation for the Justice Department to sort of get off its ass, is the shorthand. Do you have a judgment or conclusion about that, having done all of this extensive work?
Well, when we started out to make the film, I thought, this is going to be a really hard one, because here's the problem. Jack Smith's not going to talk to you. None of the Avengers who work for him are going to talk to us. The judge is not going to talk to us. No potential juror is going to talk to us. Most of the witnesses can't talk to us. Their lawyers won't let them. So how do you make a film about this, much less a 2.5-hour long film? So then it became clear to me, as we talked around and looked around and remembered the January 6th committee hearings that aired during the summer and were quite the quiet, especially at the beginning of the thing, as a sort of mini series, like a Netflix mini series called Government in Peril, or whatever you wanted to call it. There it was right before your eyes. So then it became, how useful was what happened? What happened to that information, that big book that they yielded? What happened to all of that? And to our surprise, as we called investigators from that committee, they said, oh, thank God, somebody's calling. You know, we thought this had just landed flat as a pan, even though we'd had the TV shows and 19 million people had watched them and more than a Sunday night or a Monday night football game crowds, that kind of audience numbers. And they thought, well, this has just died. But what actually happened was, as you say, it woke up some people in the Justice Department who obviously didn't want to touch this with a 10-foot pole, but here it was. The appearance of illegality and the appearance of conspiracy, and how could they not go forward? And especially when the outline existed, and I was shocked at the extent to which the report as written looks a tremendous amount like the main points of Jack Smith's indictments. So when he announced his indictments and we were interviewing the committee investigators, and they were thrilled. They were just overjoyed. All their work and all their beliefs were suddenly part of an actionable federal indictment. And so I think we came to the conclusion that while it wasn't going to determine the guilt or innocence of Donald Trump in a trial, it certainly lays out what the case that Jack Smith will make for the American people to watch and come to an understanding of what it's all about.
I want to let the audience know that Michael's also the creative force behind an award-winning documentary called Divided States of America. And you learned a lot about the divisions in our country, Michael, in that process. And you know as well as I do that what we just discussed, the House Select Committee, the report, the Justice Department, the through line there in that divided part of America that is pro-Trump, they look at that through line and say, see, it's all just a big setup. It's not about accountability. It's not about law. It's about a political agenda that was a TV show first, kind of a hit. Then the Justice Department said, oh, well, it was a hit. If it had not been a hit, maybe we wouldn't have done anything, but it was a hit. So we're going to do something. And they look at that through line and say, well, that's proof that this is illegitimate.
Well, if you're me and you've worked in this particular business for a long, long time and you've made lots of films,
right,
you know that the way that you stay alive in journalism long term is by, I'm not at all interested in balance or equivalence. I'm very interested in fairness. And I'm extremely determined in any film we make and any story we do to try to get a perspective from the so-called other side, or at least treat the material in a way that isn't just obviously this and isn't hammering people with whatever the progressives want it to be.
Right.
So I'm not a progressive, nor am I a conservative ideologue, nor am I an ideologue, I hope, in any other way. But I really like the argument of ideas. And so we look very hard for anybody who would defend it. It is very, very hard nowadays to get anybody on the Trump side to comment other than in the most obvious whataboutisms, in the allegation that it's a Tucker Carlson kind of, it's a TV show. This is North Korea now, you know, where everything gets aired simultaneously that's anti-Trump.
Yeah. Michael, I need to jump to a break. Hold that thought. I'm Major Garrett. Michael Kirk is our very special guest, segment four, The Takeout, in just a second.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Welcome back to The Takeout. Michael Kirk is our special guest, the director of creative force behind Democracy on Trial, airing January 30th across all PBS stations. Michael, you said something that I really want to hold close for a second. Just a moment ago, you said, I'm not interested in balance or equivalence, but I am interested in fairness. For my audience's benefit, please describe from your philosophical point of view the difference.
You know, without a thumb on the scale, In either print or television journalism, or broadcast journalism, whatever it's called nowadays.
Right.
Streaming television, whatever it is. You know when you watch it, if ideas are being given prominence over kind of BS actions, you know what I mean? And lots of noise. So as hard as it is to think about, imagine, what is the other side of the Trump response to what the film is and what the committee did and what people allege and what Biden will say about him? What is the response? The response is not substantive, but the burden is on me to discover the substance that's inherent in the argument if it was in a courtroom or if there was a place where you could go where all bias and partisanship were left at the door, like when you leave your phone at the door and you got to go into a private chamber and talk. Under those circumstances, what would the argument be? And I felt we had to reflect it. We have to have it in this film and all the films. It may not be a popular position always, especially in Trump. It's hard to find it. He won't give it to you. When you say, Mr. President, what do you say about that? He attacks in all the other ways, calls people names, mm-hmm. diminishes them, whatever. But there are people in the country who think there are important. Robert Ray is one of them, who think what the arguments are in this case really matter in the future when it might be a Democratic president that people are after. And I think that's right. When I talk about fairness, that's what I mean, that there's an idea alive inside a really complicated and emotional topic like this, with really emotional actions being taken by the former president. So you've got to reflect it, and you've got to show him being him, and you've got to show the other side, but you've also got to try to in some way say, is the argument about Trump, about what you do to a former president, is the argument that a president is immune and can say almost anything he wants, is that a valid argument, and how does that apply to future presidents that some of us might like? And how do I feel about that? How do I feel about turning the Justice Department loose on a former president of the United States? I'm not saying I agree with the argument, but I want the argument to be in the film so that the viewer, in a coherent way, so the viewer can say, well, I don't feel this guy's thumb on the scale here. I feel like they're really trying to lay it out for me in a way that's useful.
I gathered, Michael, from watching the documentary that you're trying to exist between these places in which there is a legal process, there is an indictment, that evidence will be tested, the procedures will be tested and reviewed, and then there is a political conversation. Right. And there are those, I met them in Iowa, New Hampshire, who believe this should never be in the legal sphere at all. They want a political adjudication only.
Yeah.
And they say Trump's prominence ought to immunize him from the legal side. To which I say, wait a minute, that's never been our history. Political success doesn't immunize you from civil liability or criminal liability if you've actually done something wrong. And they say, no, he's the number one candidate, so he should be left alone. And that's the tension. And it struck me that you're trying to exist in between those two components.
Yes, and it's as you know, a very hard thing to do because it's hard to find people. It's hard to find credible people who aren't so afraid of Trump and what Trump can do, because he's formidable in the clinches. He's formidable in primarying people, formidable in calling people names. Your status inside the Republican Party is in deep peril if you go against him. Or more importantly, for a lot of people, they just stay away from the film entirely. But it is important to try to find somebody, and thank God we did, try to find somebody who says, but wait a minute, yes, the president should be able to have freedom of speech and freedom to articulate things out loud and freedom to not agree with his campaign team and listen to Rudy Giuliani instead. That's all okay. But when it comes to something that's the yelling fire in a crowded theater kind of moment, if that is what he does with that freedom, then you need somebody who is also in the film to say, yes, all those things are true. The guy should have the right to be kind of out on the edge, but he is an American citizen. Mm-hmm. And none of us have the right to cry fire in a crowded theater. None of us have the right. We can lie on television. We can lie on podcasts. We can lie on whatever. But when it comes to something really important, like you're the president of the United States activating 70 million people, can he lie? Can he lie when he tells people something, to act on something in a violent, implying that it fight for your country, fight for your right, otherwise your country's going to go away?
Fight like hell.
Incendiary language? That's the question at hand.
Michael, I'm going to be blatantly unfair to you, and I'm going to ask you a question that is frequently asked of me. And you've been in this place talking to all these people, reviewing all this evidence to put together this documentary. If it is a close election in 2024, and there is reason to believe it very well could be.
Yeah.
Do you think we are facing another trauma like something we saw on January 6th?
The last time I flew, I left my crystal ball in,
yeah.
in the overhead, and I forgot to burn it. Major, I know that's my way of dodging the question.
Yes, that is a very, very adroit dodge. Well played, sir. Well played.
But I'll tell you this much: I think it's. I think we are already being prepared by the former president for the idea that the election is going to be rigged. Mm-hmm. Obviously, anybody who's watched this closely, including people in the January 6th committee, but also a lot of constitutional lawyers and other people we've talked to, they are very concerned about what happens with this coming election. If Biden wins or if Biden loses, if Trump wins, a whole set of things are going to, we can look at a kind of crystal ball and say, what's going to follow? And if he loses, my God, we've already seen what happened when he lost once. What will he do the next time? And with an activated and potentially violent group of people who support him. Not everybody, but enough people that maybe it could be a dangerous time in America. And that's what I'm worried about. And that's why we try to lay these films out. That's why we'll make two more before the election is over. We do this series called The Choice, where we do the two presidential candidates.
Right, right, right.
We'll do that with these two, as we've done eight other times with eight other presidential races. And we're going to do one about the vice president, since these guys are old enough that it's going to be worth it to know who the vice presidents are.
No question. We'll
be following it. You'll be following it.
Yep.
Journalism, to the extent that it still exists in America.
It still exists.
We'll be following it. And it's our job to say, watch out. It looks like the gun is loaded.
Yep.
Either way.
That is the voice of Michael Kirk, the director and creative force behind Democracy on Trial. Available January 30th on all PBS stations. Stay tuned for your Takeout Outtake Especial. Welcome to your Takeout Outtake Especial. Michael Kirk is our special guest, director, creative force behind Democracy on Trial, January 30th across all PBS stations. Michael, we have three questions we ask every guest on this show. Take them in whichever order you prefer. Most influential book in your life and why? I know that's a bit of a hard one, so you can take a moment on that. One of your favorite movies or all-time favorite movies. And if you're going to, on a long flight or a long drive, really enjoy some music, what music, artist, or genre is that most likely to be?
The movie is Heat.
Heat. Nice. Right. That's the first. We're in our eighth year. Never before has Heat been mentioned.
Heat. It's a great movie. The moral tale. It's everything. It's everything.
Excellent.
There's a great line in there because Val Kilmer's having trouble with his wife and whatever. I think De Niro, somebody says, you never know what goes on between a man and a woman. You know, it may be wonderful at home or whatever it is. There's some reason people are drawn together. And I love the line. I think it's very wise. And I think the movie is amazing. And
excellent.
I love the use of Los Angeles as a character.
For sure.
Mark Mann is amazing. So that's the movie. The book is a little bit of a, it's a challenge because I read a lot.
And of course.
I read a lot of novels. But I really, if you said Desert Island, you only get one.
Right.
It would be one of maybe Master of the Senate, one of the great books about Lyndon Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Just really, really, Robert Caro is my
right.
My favorite.
Well, it's a trilogy, so you could take all three.
Okay, I'll take
it. It's not a cheat on that.
I'll take him. He's absolutely my favorite. The story of him as a reporter that came out with, and he and Gottlieb. I love the guy. And I think anybody who's a journalist who doesn't know and follow and love the guy's method.
And music?
If you're lucky like me and you're a long-form journalist, oh my God, Caro was the God. What was the third thing? Oh, music.
Music.
Oh, I love I love my favorite album is Stan Getz and Astrid Gilberto great bossa nova stuff out of the 60s in Brazil.
That is a fantastic call. A great album. Stan Getz is one of my favorite jazz artists, and that album and that particular approach to bossa nova, super classic. Michael Kirk, it's been a great pleasure for me. All great success to you for Democracy on Trial and the other documentary projects you have going in the year 2024. We will keep in touch. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks, man. Great to talk to you.
Thank you. See you next week, folks.
The Takeout is produced by Arden Fari, Jamie Benson, Sarah Cook, Ellie Watson, Jake Rosen, and Ashley Armstrong. CBSN production by Eric Susanen. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Takeout Podcast. That's at Takeout Podcast. And for more, go to takeoutpodcast.com. The Takeout is a production of CBS News.
If you like The Takeout, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
It was the biggest scandal in pop music. The stars of Milli Vanilli, the Grammy-winning multi-platinum R&B phenomenon, were exposed as frauds. But none of this was their idea. So whose idea was it? Enter German music producer Frank Farian. He saw the success of acts like Michael Jackson and Prince, and he wanted in, no matter the cost. So he devised the perfect pop heist. Two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? They couldn't sing. But Frank knew just how to fix that. Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's greatest controversies and takes a never-before-heard look at the exploitation of two young Black artists. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when the truth came out, Rob and Fab were the only ones who got burned. Looking back now, it's hard not to wonder, why did everyone blame them and not the man pulling the strings? Follow Blame It on the Fame, Milli Vanilli, on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.